Hello and welcome to the Build with Clay podcast. I am your host, Clay Davis. This podcast is designed to introduce you to people from across the world who have one thing in common. They want to grow in their life and inspire others. You'll get a front row seat to hear about how they define their mindset and their purpose. We'll unearth their habits, their failures, and learnings throughout their journey. And this will allow you to take those habits, those failures, and those learnings and apply them to your personal growth journey, no matter where you're trying to build yourself and grow. This podcast is designed for you, so thank you for being here. Prepare to meet interesting people, hear fun stories, learn something new, and plan to leave inspired. On this episode, we build with Mary Lawrence McMillan Crook. Lovingly known as ML, she is the executive director of Camp Seafarer, where she leads more than 1,000 campers, counselors, and volunteers each summer. ML has been in my life since childhood. We went to the same schools, the same church, and played copious amounts of flag football and other intramural sports together. I'm thrilled to get her on the mic. It was no surprise that we spanned lots of topics during this conversation. ML highlighted what life at camp is like and how they offer a unique setting for anyone on site. We talked about our shared experience of losing a parent and how that's affected each of us. ML shared how important rhythms and routines can be at home and at camp. We talked about the power of community and how we as humans need community to thrive. ML has long been one of my favorite people in my life, and I am so honored and glad that she accepted my invitation to join the pod for this episode. I hope you'll enjoy this wide-ranging conversation with ML Crook. Super excited to welcome ML, or Mary Lawrence, to the pod. What do your people call you at camp?
I usually introduce myself as Mary Lawrence, classic Southern double name, but I immediately tell folks, you can call me ML, and typically ML is what campers and counselors and people at camp call me.
Okay, well, I've always known you as ML, so we're going to go with ML for the pod. All right, I've known you for a long time. We've played a lot of sports together. We've grown up going to school together, going to church together, but I have some questions here of get to know you that I will now get to know you a little bit. Would you rather be the star player on a losing basketball team or ride the bench on a winning one? And as she's thinking about this, ML, you won a state championship in basketball in high school and in soccer, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I was just saying the ideal, at least to be like first off the bench on a winning team.
No, we're talking about riding the bench.
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely, being on a winning team would be what I choose. I'm such a fan of team sports and anything you get to do with a team. And even if you're riding the bench in games, you would have a huge role in that championship. And if the coach and the leaders on their team are doing their job, then everybody feels a part of the victory, even if in the championship game or in most games you're on the bench. So I would choose that.
Yeah, losing stinks.
Mm-hmm. It really does.
Losing stuff. Would you rather spend an afternoon working on a jigsaw puzzle or a crossword puzzle?
Ooh, I like crosswords, but I feel like once you get stuck, you get stuck. And there's kind of like, I just literally don't know any more answers. Whereas a jigsaw puzzle, you could at least keep making headway. So I'd go with jigsaw puzzle.
If you're going to go on a road trip, and you're a passenger on a road trip, and you're about, it's like 5 hours long, you and Andrew hopping in the car, no kids, and you're going to stop at a convenience store on the like at the very beginning, and you're going to go get one drink and one snack. What are you grabbing?
Definitely get a Dr. Pepper and snack. Probably, if it's only one snack, something salty, like barbecue chips or salt and vinegar chips.
What's Andrew getting?
Probably corn nuts and a Diet Mountain Dew.
That
maybe jerky.
That adds up. That's great. So we were just talking with my family upstairs before we came down to do this podcast, and Hayes asked you, my oldest son asked you if you liked Harry Potter, and you said yes, and then you brought up a story about camp with Harry Potter. I'd love for you to share it.
Yeah, for sure. So Harry Potter is great. Anybody who disagrees,
you can hang up now.
Yes, exactly. We were talking about how we were talking about when's the right age to start reading Harry Potter to your kids. Because when we were growing up, they came out and we were old enough to enjoy them.
We were like Harry's age.
Exactly. Exactly. And we were like waiting for them. And so one of them came out during the summer at camp. And at some point we'll explain what I mean when I say camp. But there was all these Amazon boxes of people getting the Harry Potter book shipped to them from their parents. And we had, there had to be like rules created about don't spoil it for the people who didn't get the book. If you finish the book, you need to share it with somebody, right? You can only stay up this late to read the book.
And for you Gen Zers that are listening, when we say Amazon box, we're not talking about a Prime. Amazon Prime box.
Yeah, exactly. Back when Amazon only sold books, they were proving their concept that people would want things shipped to their house.
So you had like hundreds of camper, or maybe tens of campers getting...
Oh, it was hundreds for sure.
Hundreds of campers getting
hundreds
books.
Of Harry Potter books stacked up above my head for kids to read. That was fun.
Oh, wow. That is crazy. So... You know I'm about to ask you these two questions because I ask every guest these two questions. And so before we go into exploring your journey, I want to get your view on these two things. So first, how would you define a growth mindset?
Yep. So I think this is a good moment to pause and define what I mean when I say camp. So Camp Seafarer and Camp Seagull are brother-sister overnight camps on the coast of North Carolina. They're a part of the YMCA of the Triangle, which is Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill. So the YMCA of the Triangle has 20 plus branches with pools, gyms, day camps, after school programs, membership facilities, and then three overnight camps. So Seagull, Seafarer, and then Camp Kanata. I am the executive director at Camp Seafarer. It is my fifth summer as executive director coming up. Prior to that, I was the program director for about 8 years, and prior to that, I was counselor camper. The easy way to say it is I've spent at least a month at Seafarer every summer since 2002.
Wow.
So, it's a long time. So, it's had a lot of impact on my life, and my husband also went to Camp Seagull. He works at Camp Seagull. So, it's a big part of our life,
and to delineate, maybe I miss this, but... Camp Seafarer is for girls.
That's right.
Camp Seagull is for boys.
That's correct. Brother-sister camps is how we talk about it. But yeah, for girls and for boys. So I'm the director of the girls' camp. But we have a thought for the day every day. So one of my jobs is to lead all of the meals. So three times a day, I'm up in front of 1,000 people making announcements, keeping the day moving, adding some spirit and some fun. But at breakfast, we always do a thought for the day. So I share the thought for the day. And sometimes campers do it or counselors will do it. And one of the most well-known thoughts for the day at camp goes like this. When you stop getting better, you stop being good. And it's attributed to the first director at Seagull who said, when you stop getting better, you stop being good. And it's very much a mantra at camp and something that I therefore live by personally. It's about growth mindset, constant improvement. When you stop getting better, you stop being good. Another thing we talk about at camp that ties into it is meaning is made in reflection. Because a lot of times if you're in something hard, which is often when you're growing, you can't see it in the moment. It might just feel hard or feel frustrating. And sometimes it takes a friend or a family member to reflect back to you. You're in a growth spurt. We'll say that at camp, right? When a counselor's having a hard time, I'm like, yeah, you're in a growth spurt right now. With kids, that happens physically, and with all of us, it happens through these challenges in life. And then every Sunday, we talk about reflecting, resetting, and resting. So rhythms, I think, are really important in life, and we use those at camp. And so the opportunity to reflect, the fact that meaning is made in reflection and you find and can observe growth through that reflection. And then having a growth mindset is, to me, when you stop getting better, you stop being good.
Can you expand on the rhythm?
For sure. So routine and rhythm are two words that come to mind. It's a big part of my life right now with three young kids. And then at camp, I mentioned it's 1,000 people. Like at our peak in the summer, there are 702 campers on site, age 8 to 16, in our care, about 200 staff members. And so...
And you are the leader of all of that.
Yes. We've got a team of awesome folks. And we have volunteer doctors, staff nurses, volunteer doctors who support us, and then a team of directors, and then about 200 college age, high school age staff, and then campers are age 8 to 16. So to keep that group moving in the right direction, there's got to be a lot of rhythms and routines. And I think that's really healthy for young people and for all of us. But gosh, our whole mission at camp is to build leaders and invest in at Seafair young women. Right, another big part of my job and us as directors, we say we're just role models. We are pouring into the counselors who pour into the campers, and everybody at camp can be a role model for somebody else. And we can all learn from each other, but we all have to contribute to the community for it to be beneficial and effective. So when I think about rhythms and routines at camp, there are bugles which guide our day, but we wake up at 7:30, and by 7:50 you are going to eat breakfast. We eat at 8, we eat at 1, and we eat at 6. And we gather at the flagpole before every meal to where we're making sure everybody's there. It's also a rhythm to stop, pause, make sure we have everybody, and then we go in and eat. We always eat family style at camp, which is around the table. And you pass the food around. You make sure everybody's served before anybody takes a bite. We say a blessing as a community before everybody sits down. You make sure everybody's served, and then you can eat. There's community there. There's respect, responsibility, caring for one another. Our values are just intended to be embedded in everything we do. Translate that to my personal life. I actually recently read a book called Habits of the Household, which talks about rhythms, and is really focused on young families by Justin Whitmill Early. Loved it. But we picked up on a rhythm from his book. We now light a candle before dinner with our family. And A, it's really fun. Like, what young kid doesn't love to blow out the match or get to blow out the candle? Our problem is we have one candle and three kids, but you got to take turns. Anyway, that routine, that rhythm says the lighting of the candle means it's time to eat. Fire, flame is calming. And it's a start and then an end as well, right? When we blow out the candle, that means dinner is done. We take turns lighting the candle and take turns blowing it out. Now I'm describing like a lot of order. It is straight up chaos around this candle. But my hope and my intention would be that there's these anchors in our kids' life that they can come back to, and or anchors for our family that we can, right, the stress of work or the day, or even just the stress of getting dinner on the table, right? The candle's lit. That's when phones go away, not at the table for Andrew and me. And everybody sits there and we're at least trying to talk to each other and having fun. Usually someone like stands up in the middle or is feeding the dog or crying, but there's some rhythm to it.
I like that. I like that a lot. We implemented the no phones at the table very early on. Whitney was great about that. And we haven't looked back. I mean, even now, like Whitney has an Apple Watch. I don't have one, but she's got one. And Hayes, our oldest, will call her out if like she even just looks at it. Even if she's just looking for the time, it'll get called out. Mommy, no phones at the table. And that includes your watch. So that's been great. But also we do, I guess one of our rhythms, as you've talked about it, one of our rhythms is do your highs and lows of the day. So everyone shares their high of the day and their low of the day. And that's been a fun rhythm. And a couple months ago, Wells, who is coming up on 2, who can't really talk, he can say one word at a time. we'll ask him. Whitney's like, we should just ask him, like, make him part of the rhythm, make him part of the routine. And, you know, we'll ask him, hey, what was your high of the day? What was your best part of the day? And he'll go, ah, blah, blah, blah. And then we'll ask him, well, what was your low of the day? Ah, blah, 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 blah. And every time, but he's happy to be a part of it. And hopefully over time, he's, you know, obviously voicing his actual high and low of the day. But it is something that, you know, we sit down at the table and now they're like, oh, yeah, all right, highs and lows.
Yeah, that's great. We have two questions similarly. We say, what are you thankful for? And then what was the best part of your day? And the thankful one actually came from Andrew and I wanting to foster a little bit more spirit of gratitude in ourselves and like forcing myself to answer, what am I thankful for each and every day, has been really cool. Duncan, our 2.5-year-old, he says, we ask him as well every day, what are you thankful for? Mama. What was the best part of your day? Mama. Like, I'll take it. He's batting 100% saying mama always.
Has it dulled at all for you, or are you just like loving that every time he
says it? Oh, I love it every time. It's hilarious.
But there's going to come a day when it's not going to be mama.
Yep. I'm well aware.
So one of your gratefuls of the day might want to be like that he says that every day.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because it's not going to happen. Oh, that's
but I think wonderful. You're right about, I would agree with just involving kids from the beginning, and even the phone thing. We wanted to start really early on that so that when and if our kids ever do get phones or VR goggles, whatever it is when they're old enough, that it is just what our family does, not having to reset a rhythm. And right. Okay. Now that you have a phone, we don't have phones at the table. Right. No, that's just what we've always done.
Yeah.
And that, it's probably a little bit of philosophy from my parents, but I think that's really important.
Yeah, I agree. I think that can have a huge benefit. And I was envisioning when we have friends over, and if one of them pulls out their phone, our kids call them out. I'm like, yeah, that we don't have phones at the table. And our friends are obviously very respectful about it and everything. It's just funny that they're the police on it now. So I wouldn't be surprised if your kids become the same.
I will say, though, it's never too late to start that habit. So,
yes,
even though we started early.
I think it's a wonderful habit, no matter what. Honestly, if you're at the restaurant, if you're wherever. I mean, even just beyond food, just don't have your phone. Mm-hmm. It'll be okay.
Well, and we found that our kids, like, they don't even think about, like, at a restaurant, like, we don't use screens at all. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not, like, great at restaurants. And we depend on which ones we pick and choose where we go carefully. But, like, they just enjoy being a part of the conversation.
Yeah. And you just realize, like, everyone was a kid at some point. Usually most people will give you grace, especially if you're not selecting Ruth's Chris or something like that, right? You're selecting a Mexican restaurant that brings chips right away and has booths and, you know, doesn't really care if people are running around like crazy. So, but yeah, we've been the same way about not having screens and trying to be intentional. I'm curious, have y'all, obviously the tech landscape will change. And I'm sure, like you said, kids will be wearing VR goggles or have an implant in their eye or whatever is going to happen. What does your gut say as to when your oldest will have a phone?
Gosh, that's a good question. This actually relates back to my like professional work. So I think one of the best things we offer at camp right now, in addition to leadership development and role models and growth and all the fun and the activities, is it is completely technology free. So kids, when they come, if it plays or records video or connects to the internet, you cannot have it.
Can't even have it on site.
No, can't bring it.
Is that included for counselors?
Our counselors, we ask that they limit their use to their time off and once their kids are in bed at like 10 p.m. And right, they'll use their phone to play music. And like, so there's technology around, but at 5 p.m., I'll walk over to the far side, which is where the older girls' cabins are. And it's just these circles of, teenagers, you know, imagine like 8 to 12 girls in a circle in the grass, reading, talking, laughing. There's not a phone in sight, which
would never happen.
No, you do not see that anywhere else in the world. And most camps are actually sticking to that because it's so valuable. And when you actually talk to the teenagers, they love it. And we're trying to be better about how do we help them recognize and appreciate it at camp and then figure out how they're going to go back into the world, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's such a good respite, teaches how to have face-to-face conversations, empathy. I mean, there's like a book coming out this week, from what I understand. I've read a few articles about it, just truly talking about the impact of technology on this generation coming up and like even their ability to read cues in a face-to-face conversation and to have empathy is far less because so much of their communication is through the phone. And I could go for like days on it. My hope is that when our kids get older, there's somewhat of a like agreement from parents that we can do it different than the generation before. To me, this falls in the category, there's a Maya Angelou quote of, do the best you can until you know better, and then do better. And like when phones first came out, we didn't know. But now we know. So we should do better.
She is a master of quotes, by the way. Oh, she yes. is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
She is so good. I've had a similar refrain. You said it much more eloquently than I did, but I'm just hopeful that parents that we're surrounded by can collectively agree that they're not good. And sure, we need to be able to communicate with our children in some form or fashion in some instances, but them just walking out of school, staring at their phone, which I see even in elementary school, and it's like, there's no way that this is a good thing long-term.
Mm-hmm. The book I was talking about, I don't know exactly what it's called, but it was basically, the article I read about the book was saying that it's going to take collective action, right? Like, we could decide next year to ban phones in school and during school hours. And, like, even that would give kids 8 hours of respite.
Yeah.
Is that actually going to happen? Like, I don't know. We at camp are doing it.
I was about to say, it's
we're proven. Doing it at camp, and it's working well.
And that's
right?
interesting.
You do have to train parents to let go. And
that's probably harder. It's harder for the parents to send their kids away for a week, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, and they're like, oh, my kid's not, I can't like email them or text them or Snapchat them or whatever. Like it's probably harder on them than the kids.
Yeah. So we quickly go to, okay, what communication do you have? Right. There is a one-way email service. So we'll print out, like if a parent wants to write an email, we'll print it out and it goes in their mailbox. Handwriting a letter. The kids handwrite letters. We ask the kids to write home twice a week. If you ever need to call about something, you call the office and we can relay a message. If there's anything going on, we'll call, of course. And then the cabin counselor writes home once a week to the parents to say, hey, here's what Hayes has been up to this week, and this is what he's enjoying. So it's a good good opportunity, in my opinion, for the parents and the campers. But it's a thing to like make that shift from what
like,
we're used to.
It's like getting rid of addictive behavior, which is, I mean, there are like facilities for this to get rid of, and you're like attempting to do it in a scale of, you know, 1,000 people, and that's affecting thousands of people because of their friends not being able to get up with them, their parents, or not get up with them, but in the manner they're used to. So I think that's fantastic. I mean, I and I'm hopeful that more camps and more places will start to do this.
For sure. It also just creates an environment where kids can process with someone different than their parents, which like is hard and good, but that's how you learn new things and develop skills for yourself to be able to process and work through challenges with a camp counselor. And maybe write home to your parents about it, but it's not constant. Reflection. Actually, another thing I read recently, or I've heard recently, is talking about just the mental health crisis of teenagers. But one of the most direct indicators of positive mental health in teenagers is one significant relationship with an adult, and it doesn't have to be your parents. And like ideally, it's in addition to your parents, there's like one adult who cares about you. It makes me think about our common experience growing up at church and Casper Holroyd, who was like the leader of that Sunday school class. I'm like, the number of kids who he had a relationship with and they knew he cared about them, like that right there is an indicator that like you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
During your teenage
years. Man, that's amazing. It's powerful. I was drafting a newsletter and I'm talking about Casper, and I wrote like one of my personal heroes, and then in parentheses I said many readers will also be nodding their head because Casper was a personal hero of many people, you know, around our age.
But that right there, an adult showing and saying I care for you, has incredible impact on kids and teens and their mental health.
Man, that's fascinating. That is really fascinating. All right, so the other question I like to ask is around your purpose or your why. So how would you define your purpose or why, ML?
I planned this ahead so I could be succinct with it. I've never been short of words in my life. And I process verbally, so that leads to me talking even more. But this one I actually thought about my grandpa, who's 100 now, and he's still living. And I think about things he told us throughout life. And one of the biggest things I remember him repeating was, if you do anything in life, it's after a Bible verse, but love God and love your neighbor, right? Love the Lord your God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. And I think that if I were to sum up my purpose, like love God and love your neighbor, it applies to every aspect of life, work, home, family. And, you know, even if you're not a super spiritual or religious person, the concept of God to me is related to just something bigger than yourself. And loving your neighbor is about community to me, and humility and not being self-focused. So recognizing that you're a part of something bigger than yourself, and that for that to succeed, community, we all have to lift each other up and focus on others.
Love God and love your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
ML's life mission. Love that.
Working on it.
Let's jump back to your parents.
Okay.
We haven't talked about your lovely parents. What did they do for a living? And then I think that'll become pretty obvious of how that influenced you.
Yeah. Yep. So I am the oldest of five kids. A Raleigh native, fun fact, third generation Broughton High School graduate, my grandpa, who's 100 right now, still living, and my dad, and then me. So my dad worked for the YMCA. He's actually a teacher first. His first 8 years out of college, he was a teacher in Eastern North Carolina. You may not know that.
I did not know that.
And then he started working full-time for the YMCA through Camp Siegel. But for most of his career, he was the CEO of the YMCA, the Triangle. And my mom, she's from Eastern North Carolina, but went to UNC. And a friend of hers at UNC got her to come work at Camp Seafair one summer. And my dad's a little bit older than my mom, but they ended up meeting through Siegel and Seafair. And then my mom worked for the Y here in Raleigh. She actually started the first day camp. So anyone who lives in Raleigh knows why day camp is like, it's what everyone does. But my mom started the first one. And my dad was working for the Y at that time as well. So anyway, mom then stopped working after three kids. And we say she stopped working for a paycheck. She was like a professional volunteer for sure. And that shaped, you know, my life in a lot of ways. But they met through Siegel and Seafair, both worked for the Y. Dad worked for the Y. Now I work for the Y and Seafair.
I was about to say, how in the world did you get involved with
the Y? My husband also works for the Y and camp, so it's just a family thing. But yeah.
Yeah. Y'all's Y lineage is strong. I would say stronger than anyone else in Raleigh.
For sure.
Is for sure. And I know your dad retired recently.
He did.
Right. So after a lot of, man, how, so that was probably
30, who's 30 years as CEO.
30 years. And then more than that as doing other work. Mm-hmm. So 30 plus years of working with the Y.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. And then you and I have a shared experience around our parents, one of our parents passing early.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So my dad passed in 2018 from ALS, which was a 18-month decline. And if you don't mind sharing about your mom, because it happened around the same time, a little bit before.
That's right. My mom, she passed away in 2017, and it was different because it was completely unexpected. If you'd asked, like, us at that time, like, I would have guessed your dad would have passed away before any 100%. Of my parents.
Yep. And so. My dad was in a wheelchair at your mom's funeral, so mm-hmm. The decline was real already. I know I have a lot of lessons from my dad's passing. I'm curious what lessons you have taken from your mom's passing now that it's been almost 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I take it back. I got married in 2017. She passed away in 2018. It was spring of 2018.
Okay, and then it was later, December for 2018. Yep, for
yours was later that year, so I got my years off. So mom passed away spring of 2018. So my anniversary was Monday. So I was married 7 years Monday. And
happy anniversary.
So, thank you. So mom died 6 years ago. Anyway, yeah, it's just one of the biggest things I feel like is losing a parent early. It's very much a club you don't want to be a part of, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody. But it's also, like, club is the wrong word for it, but it's happened to more people than you realize. And I've been amazed by the connection to friends who've had similar experiences and or people who I didn't even realize that was a part of their story, and they became, you know, supportive to me. It kind of goes back to the why of creating community and being in community with people. I think we're meant to have relationships with one another, and hard things are going to happen, but they can make us closer and make us have a stronger community and stronger relationships if we show up the way I think we should. So anyway, that's been kind of like the broad just aha. And I feel like what was so fascinating in the few weeks after her death, I really can't overstate how unexpected it was, and that's just a part of the story. But the few weeks after, and even like months after, like, we just had no idea how broad her reach and impact were. I mean, some of her best friends at the funeral saw other people there and were like, "What? You knew her?" And they were like, "Yeah, she impacted me through this thing." So she was really dedicated to our church. Probably like most, that was like her biggest area of volunteerism, but like so many other things. And I remember her at sometimes almost being like self-conscious that she was like, "Well, what do I do for work? Like, what do I do?" And I remember dad was always like, "You do plenty." But to know her before her death, and she knew she had like purpose, but she would joke about, what should I do for work? It's like, you don't need a job. You're impacting people in incredible ways. And that was just who she was. But it's what we all know, that like, it doesn't matter what you do, it's how you do it, and people remember how you make them feel. But
that's a Maya Angelou quote.
Yep. Yeah. Like, we all know that, but it just became so real for me when she passed away, because even the impact that she had on like my friends growing up and just people she encountered on a day-to-day basis, because she made them feel good about themselves, she believed in them, and I think she pushed people to be better too. I hear people now at church talking about how she pushed them to do something, or said, "Hey, you would be good for this." Was like always looking for ways to challenge people or get them to step up and participate in community.
On this podcast, that happened. I was talking to Mary Catherine, who runs the preschool at the church, and I said, "How did you like even get involved?" And it was like, "Well, Joanna McMillan, ML's mom, came up to me and was like, 'You need to be the preschool director.'"
Mm-hmm.
And and it, she was like, you can't say no to Joanna. Like, you know, you can't do that. But it just speaks to the reach of just, and now Mary Catherine has like completely transformed the preschool. It is like, I mean, and your sister is very involved in it. I mean, she has, and, but that would never have happened without your mom seeing someone and the potential that they have and then telling them. And being like, no, like giving them the confidence that no, you, this is your path. Like this should be your path. Go explore it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's like two or three things in there that are worth unpacking. One is, yeah, you can't say no to Joanna. That was our experience as children as well. It's part of my like philosophy on rhythms and routines too, right? The whole concept, but like if this is just what our family does, then it's not a debate with my children. Hopefully I definitely have arguments and debates with my children, but as much as I can set of like, this is what we do, then it's not a debate. And that was my experience as a child. Mom used to always say too, parenting is leadership. And I think that's really true. If we can lead our children well and right, like lead together as a parenting team, whether it's your, you know, partner, spouse or husband or wife, but like it takes leadership and it takes a team
and a lot of communication.
Like there's so many cross learnings there. And then I think there's so much to be said for like helping kids process emotions and right, listening to them, but also sometimes you just got to move on and know when to like cut your losses and say like, this is what we're doing. Come on.
Right.
If I let my child make every single decision, then we would get nowhere. And yeah. So
there's a saying at work that our boss has been really trying to push it. It's like, hey, you can disagree, but at some point you have to commit. Like you can voice your disagreement. We can talk about it. But if this is where the direction we're going, you got to commit. And it's kind of that way with the kids. Like, hey, I understand. I hear you, but you got to commit. We're going. Mm-hmm. We're doing this.
For sure. I really like that. One I've heard at work recently is, right, as a leader, I can give you clarity. I won't always be able to give you satisfaction. You've got to figure out, like, are you satisfied with this or figure it out. But I, as a leader, can give you clarity, and we together can hopefully get to satisfaction. Or that's more on you.
We don't have to go down this tangent, but on satisfaction, I heard a math equation on satisfaction. Satisfaction is the things you have divided by the things you want. And so if there's a lot of things you want, your satisfaction is going to be low.
That's really good.
And so it can apply to broader life. It can apply to a specific scenario, but I thought that was a good equation for.
That's really good. So I think I started this kind of spiel with like, there's a couple things to unpack there. One, you can't say no to her. That's been like a part of my personal parenting philosophy. And she talked about parenting as leadership. And the other one, just the concept of, I think she was really good at seeing potential in others, telling them it and challenging them to meet it. Something we talk about at camp is the difference of sympathy, empathy, and compassion.
You want to break that down?
I sure will. There's a visual that goes along with it. So, right, let's say you're stuck in a hole that's over your head. And there's no way for you to get out unless I, walking by, help you. So sympathy would be me looking down the hole and being like, Clay, I just feel so bad for you. Like, I'm really, really sympathetic to the fact that you're stuck in that hole. And that's it. Empathy is, oh my gosh, you are stuck in that hole. Let me get in that hole with you. And like, I'm going to feel what you're feeling and do this hard thing with you. But now we're both stuck in the hole. Compassion is, hey, gosh, you are in that hole and you need some help getting out. Wait right there. Let me go find a ladder and I'm going to get you out of this hole. And so sympathy's good, empathy's good, but compassion is how we really improve the world and community.
How do you teach compassion?
It's a good question. Let me know when you figure it out.
Do y'all try at Seafair? Like, is that a a core competency, or I don't know how you would frame that, a value that you try to instill?
Yeah, so we talk about sympathy, empathy, and compassion that with our counselors and training them of like, how do you support campers? So that would be something that we expect counselors to do. And we use that analogy and write that visual. Like that, what I just told you is
you guys
like,
actually dig a hole and get everyone to come around?
We should.
Then it'll really sink in.
Right, but you as a counselor, that's how you should be treating campers. With campers, we talk more about caring, honesty, respect, responsibility. Those are four values, and they really apply to everything. We have four rules, too. Listen, share, try your best, do what's right.
Wow. I'm going to start using those rules with my kid. We already talk about our family is all about trying. If you ask any of my older two kids, what is our family all about? It's all about trying.
I stole your I can't do that yet.
Yes, that's
a
good one.
My four-year-old. She's the only one talking right now. But yeah, listen, share, try your best, do what's right. Applies always. And then caring, honesty, respect, responsibility are the values. So I would say compassion, we more talk about it with counselors, right? Then you get into how are we measuring whether we're teaching it well. Probably not that sophisticated around it, but it's a good concept. But the whole idea of action is where I was going with that, and to have community that's effective where we help the least of these, it requires action on people's part. We can't just sit around and talk about it. We can't just feel bad about things. We can't just be frustrated about things. Like, we have to do something.
Which is what Joanna McMillan would do.
She
would take action.
Expected of other people. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, I could totally see her coming up to someone like Mary Catherine, saying those things, and then following up and be like, did you do it? Like, or I heard that you didn't actually apply, or I heard that you didn't do the interview, or whatever was happening. And then like hold people accountable to take the action.
For sure. If she were still here, I'm sure she'd have a list for you too.
Oh, 100%.
And for me.
Absolutely. But I mean, we need people like that, and we need more of that, because you're right. You can say, oh, I feel bad for this person, or I feel for this person, or this group of people. Well, do something about it. Even if it's small, a small act of, I'm sure there's some great quote out there about a small act of kindness or a small act and how it ripples throughout time.
Well, and it's interesting you're talking about this. I still go to Hayes Barton, and there was a meeting of like young parents just talking about the future of children's and youth ministries. And it was really interesting. And Casper, who we've already talked about, came up, and my mom came up as like these unicorn volunteers. But I had a comment during the thing. I said, you know what? Neither of them would have said they were a unicorn. They were just doing what their passion was and what they were good at. And so my argument to the group was, we all can be a unicorn in the space where we're gifted. Because there were definitely volunteer roles that mom did not do at church. And there were volunteer roles that Casper did not do at church. Other people had different gifts. And so their gifts have to do with leading lots of people and having a broad impact. But we all can have a deep impact if we focus on where our gifts are and just do something.
Yeah, I look at my mom in that example, who...
She's a perfect example
did
of that.
Tons of stuff in the church, but all she cared about was doing stuff behind closed doors. She just wanted to do all the little things behind closed doors, get no credit. No one talk about what Jane Davis did, but she did a ton. Just like others, like Jane Holding and many others. But they were not in the limelight like your mom or Casper, who kind of like crave, like extroverts, wanted to be a part of people. And like, that's just not what my mom wanted. Just like other people. But yeah, that dichotomy is...
Yeah, the Joy class would have not existed without Casper, nor without Jane Holding and Jane Davis.
Right. All
the
people...
The beach retreat sure wouldn't have happened.
No, and that's the thing. Like, the last thing my mom honestly wanted to do was to actually go to the beach retreat and stay up all night and do all the crazy stuff. Like, she wanted to just be in her own bed and do her own thing, but all the proactive things and measures and forms and setup that needed to happen, she was all in. But mm-hmm. Y'all go have fun, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody's got gifts and talents.
To kind of close out on the lessons from death is how I've always mm-hmm. kind of thought about it. What's something that you changed? Or it could be you, or it could be your family. And I'll provide an example. But what's something that you changed personally that you don't think would have happened had your mom not died? So I'll give an example where for my brother and I and my mom... We now say, I love you. If we're hanging up the phone, say, I love you. If we're with each other and we're leaving the house, say, I love you. And that was very different. We did not grow up in a household where that was verbalized, but that immediately changed with my dad's passing. So any thoughts for you personally, your family, of something that changed because of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say we're definitely, I'm more thoughtful about I love you and also like physically hugging family members. I'm not like a huge hugger, like, you know, people, I'm definitely not like the biggest hugger at work or at camp or anything, but for family and close friends, I try to be intentional about that more now. And part of that was, I mean, the last time I saw mom was on Mother's Day. And I just so distinctly remember having a hug from her, hugging her, like, I love you. And I'm so thankful that was my last memory with her. There's probably some meaning there, but that's my last memory. And that was the last time I saw her and had a face-to-face conversation with her. So, right, just like how we leave people with hugs and verbalizing how we care about them is definitely important. We definitely said I love you growing up, and mom was always hugging us, but it's more intentional for me now. And then, you know, this concept of community is probably the other one. I was saying that, like, at her funeral and the weeks after, it was just like the amount of people who were impacted by her and touched by her was just overwhelming. And I knew she was involved, but like it was another level to see it and to feel it. But the aha was for me that you can't impact people and you can't impact a community unless you're part of a community. And I think that's something that's changing, you know, generation to generation, right? If you talk about work, a generation ago, people worked at the same place for like their whole career.
Which means they had community
at work. And I'm not saying that has to be where you find community. For me, my work is tied in with my purpose, and I work for a nonprofit. So, yeah, I work for a nonprofit, and I work literally at a camp where the purpose is to, like, build and develop leaders. So it's all about community, even with our volunteers and the parents who are a part of it. So I feel fortunate that I do have that at work, and I've been a part of that long enough that it feels like a community, and I'll likely continue doing that. But it's abnormal compared to my peers to have already been in the same job for so long and likely gonna stay in it longer. Right, so where I'm going with this is if work is not our community, right, if people move around more in this generation, like the question becomes for me, like, what is your community? And like, that's what I would challenge people to think about, and that's what I think about. We started going back to Hayes Barton after mom passed away because that felt like an important community for us to be a part of. If working from home works for you and like not being a part of a church works for you, like, that's fine. That's not my reality right now, but my point is that we've been intentional to say, like, what are the communities, right? And like, even friends, who do we want to invest in? What friends do we want to be a part of our children's life? And your children can drive who friends are a little bit, but I look back on my parents. They did have like a core group of friends who, even though kids didn't match up the same way, it was like we ended up doing a lot of life together. Mm-hmm. And that group over time has had a lot of impact. So what is community? Who is your community? Might be work, might be church, might be friends. Could even be as simple as family. Like, for me, my family is a community that I want to invest in.
Yeah. It's funny. We were talking about birthday parties earlier, you and I, before we started recording. And I'm thinking back to all of Hayes's, who's now turning 8 this week. All his birthday parties have basically been inviting our friends over. And then if they have kids, which we were pretty early on having kids. So it was like, we invite like some of our close friends. And then Hayes has gotten to know them. And now, like, I think about a little bit morbidly, but like, if I were to die tomorrow, like, I know he still has those other adult figures in his life that know what I'm about and will carry on you know, and be a part of his life. I have no doubt that to some degree that they have invested in him, and you know, so that like gives me some kind of to tie in a lot of the things that you've talked about. I think we unintentionally we have done that.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's funny you say that, because I mom passed away about a year after we were married, and on the 1 year anniversary of her death was when I was pregnant and like to the point where we were going to start telling people. So I called, like, I remember calling like her three or four best friends on that day, and that wow. shared with them that I was pregnant. And that has been probably the biggest hole that I've personally felt. I mean, like becoming a mom, so many of my friends are like, yeah, I call my mom. If you're fortunate enough to have, you know, a great mom, you may feel that way with like your dad too. It's yep. like becoming a dad, and then
yeah, I had my dad for Hayes, but like that was at the very beginning. It wasn't like, I feel like the early stages, I hope I'm not being too sexist with this, but the beginning stages is like a lot on the mom,
mm-hmm.
and then like the dad stuff starts coming in later as they age,
mm-hmm.
and so yeah, once I hit that, I had no longer had my dad, so mm-hmm. I totally get.
But those people who are her friends who knew what she was about, like to your point, you know, some of my aunts have very much like filled the gap, if for you sure. will. Even I'm like a grown adult now, but you still like,
of course,
you rely on your parents.
Of course, yeah. I mean, because you trust in them and you believe in what they think, and they know you. They know the type of person you are and can give you good advice. So yeah, I certainly feel that. So speaking of family, I recall you telling me like, this is probably 7 years ago, that your uncle, I think, told you to always say yes to something. Does that ring a bell at all?
Oh, good question. Always say yes. Not specifically.
Okay, vaguely, I'm pretty though. Sure it was an... we were like sitting in Florida at one of the flag national tournaments, and we were all talking, and I think we were talking about why did you end up playing flag with us? And it was, oh, well, I just remember my uncle telling me like a long time ago, just say yes to everything. Right. Just say yes to everything. And you can eventually say no, but like say yes and you'll experience a lot of life. And so is that ringing a bell at all?
That is ringing a bell. I think it's like, especially going into the college years, yes. That was probably when it was like, just say yes to simple, like, right. Not like
sure.
drugs, not right, like, right. you know,
right. There are things to say.
There
no
are
to,
things to say no to, but if it's an invitation to be a part of something.
Right.
Or to do something, like, just say yes and try it.
So I remember you saying that, and I was like, oh, wow, well, I'm so grateful for that, because you said yes to playing flag, and then that led to a lot of fun adventures and competition together. But I would be curious how you view that now, being over 30, with kids. How do you view saying yes versus saying no now?
Oh, gosh, yeah. So different. Because I think it's very much a season of life thing, right? Yeah, in college... that is a time to figure out who you are and explore. I'm also like extroverted. So saying yes to an invitation was like, yeah, like that's great. Gave me a lot of energy. There's probably people listening to this who are like, what? Say yes to everything. But being a parent, becoming a mom, you know that you are not going to focus on yourself as much, but probably this idea of like rhythm and routines comes back. I mean, I feel like we're just constantly talking about like, what are our priorities, and is the amount of time we're spending on those priorities aligned with how we would prioritize?
Do you have an actual process for that? I would be very curious how that plays out in your life. I think prioritization is like so huge.
Yeah. I would say it's something where nothing super formal, other than my advice to people when they're becoming parents is just like, if it ain't working, change it and then try something else, because it's so seasonal in the very beginning, right? Like my youngest is 6 months old. And the routines and rhythms that were working for us right before she was born are very different than right after. And even the fact that she's still taking a bottle and I'm still nursing her some just means that like getting up and working out first thing is not an option for me right now. But there will be a season of life where that can come back. So I'm probably like close to creating a more like systematized, but Andrew and I, we have an annual marriage retreat which he dubbed it.
You're gonna have to definitely describe this.
He dubbed it that. I mean, it started as like, hey, let's try to get away once a year, just like two nights, and we just get on the beach. So nothing super fancy, but we've really needed it to just kind of reset. What does the next year look like? I mean, we have like a shared list on our phone of like goals for the year, and it's as simple as spending one-on-one time with each kid, and as complex of like what are our financial goals and what big things do we want to try to do this year, and does that require us, you know, living differently month to month so that we can do that big thing? And his was like wanting to play golf once a month. But if I know that it's a goal of his to play golf once a month, then I, as spouse and partner, can help make that happen rather than being like, what do you mean you're going to play golf? If right. it's like
it changes
framed,
the dynamic.
Yeah, if it's framed in this larger, right? And that for him is a way to spend time with his friends and have community and build a relationship and like his people who know what he's about. Okay, great. Yeah, go play golf. But if it's just like the day before, I want to spend 3+ hours on the golf course. We have three plus.
I think it's like more like 6 when you talk about got to get there. You got to hit the driving range.
You're right. But if it's framed in the broader prioritization, it makes sense, and I can support it. And so it also allows us to have some of those harder, maybe heavier conversations when we're really away from the kids and can focus on it. And also it's not by getting away, it has helped us frame it that our conversation's not only about that, right? We may have like gone on a walk that morning and had fun just hanging out at the beach. And then that afternoon it's like, okay, let's have this conversation. And then we're going to go out to dinner. Whereas like any serious conversation we try to have right now, just as a part of our normal life, inevitably is the night that somebody won't go to bed or is waking up, or it comes right after we didn't get a good night's sleep because kids were waking up every hour. And so to just carve out time to do that. So our marriage retreat, we kind of fell into it, and now it's like a thing and a piece of advice we give to other people.
I think that's great. Do y'all check in like quarterly? I'm thinking from a business standpoint, do you check in along the way, or you wait for the whole annual thing to happen again?
So one of the things I love about my work is the seasonal nature of it. We like deliver program in the summer, and like even the analogy of like that is our Super Bowl, right? People are like, oh, is the summer tiring? I was like, yeah, but like that is the whole reason we exist, right? That'd be asking, yeah, Patrick Mahomes, like, yeah, isn't the playoff run,
isn't that really tiring?
Like, yes, but that is like...
It's the whole point.
It's the whole point. And then there's a natural debriefing, and then there's a natural like rest-ish in the off season. I do work year-round full-time. I will make that clear. Some people think working at a camp, oh, are you just like off the other 9 months? No, there's a lot of work to do. And then it's getting ready in the spring. So... because our lives revolve around that, there's very natural kind of quarterly check-ins for us, but we don't do it formally. But I observe peers who don't have a seasonal nature to their life or work. Maybe I would recommend like creating that. But yeah, it's like you go on retreats with the people you work with. Andrew's my coworker in life.
Yep.
Right? It's more than that, but... to give time and attention to that relationship. And we do more than just get away and like 2 nights a year for each other, but that's like our
Formalize it, and you can kind of make it fun. And
we try to have a date night once a year. I mean, once a month. We try to do like a dedicated date night once a month, and we've got a few other like check-ins, like, right? But that's a part of our goals too, like what are our goals. And I do have a lot of night and weekend work, which allows for a lot of flexibility, but I would say we have to plan out our schedule a little bit more intentionally than my peers who have a more traditional, you know, 9-to-5.
Yeah. All right. I got a couple of quick hitters for you.
Okay.
And we'll see how many we get through, and then we'll close out. So In the last 5 years, what have you become better at saying no to?
Watching Carolina basketball. And when I first got pregnant, also I started saying no to rec leagues, such as flag football or volleyball.
Yes, you said
and
no
stuff
to
like
me.
That. Yeah, I've now said no. No said.
So when you say no to Carolina basketball, what does that mean?
I jokingly say the two biggest ways I changed, not jokingly, but really, like in becoming a mom, I don't play flag football anymore. I don't like do rec sports the way I used to, intramurals in college and then, you know, whatever they're considered post-college, and watching Carolina basketball and Carolina sports. One thing is interesting, Andrew's a State fan, so that's not a commonality for us. I observe that my friends from college who married a Carolina fan as well, like that's a bonding thing. But for us, I'm like, we're not going to watch every State and Carolina game just to support each other. We don't have that much time. And it became a time thing too. But funnily enough, like we've now become Carolina Hurricanes fans, and that's a bonding thing. All right, my kids love the Hurricanes. We can all get on board for it. And I'm embarrassed to admit it, but both my kids would. Chose the Wolfpack to win.
That's disappointing. You've lost that
national championship. So I may have lost the battle, but the war is not over. Put it that way.
Okay, so Carolina's playing in the Sweet 16 on Thursday night.
Yeah, way too late.
9:40.
I still know when they're playing.
But are you saying yes? Are you going to watch that game?
Definitely not. It's way too late.
Okay, if the game was at 8.
I'd probably watch that one. But I used to watch. I mean, I used to like know the schedule, watch every game. Right. Prioritize going to a game every year. I mean, I didn't miss a home game my whole college career.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a big thing to say no to.
And now it's just, had to go.
Yep. Hey,
and the team sports too.
Yeah.
Team sports.
The team sports has been a big impact on me not having ML. We played it. I'm still playing flag, and we had a game on Monday where the team played man-to-man defense and didn't have the girls I needed to, exploit that. So you were much needed in that situation.
I think some of that will come back though. I'm excited for when my kids are old enough to play, like to play with them, and they're into watching the Hurricanes right now. So I think like once they can watch sports and get excited about it, it'll come back.
Yeah, we've hit that phase, and now like Hayes and Walker will come to my basketball games or come to my flag football games, and they love it. Like they love because they know a lot of the people, so they have fun being around the adults, and you know, and the adults are great about that. But they're the same adults. A lot of them are the same adults that are coming to the birthday party, right, or coming over to watch a Carolina basketball game or to hang out or whatever. So they love being a part of that, and it's really fun for me to have them there because I know that my days are numbered. At some point, I'm not going to be able to play.
I also just don't want to get hurt, and reality of having 3 kids in 4 years of like.
Yeah, yeah, your body's been through a few things.
I feel
things.
Very different than I did 8 years ago.
What book have you most given as a gift?
A book's not like a go-to gift for me, but the one I mentioned earlier, Habits of the Household, I've been recommending that a lot recently and given that recently.
All right, I like that. Whitney and I are reading Hunt, Gather, Parent. Okay. Have you ever heard that before? Heard that one? So I read it a couple years ago. Shared some of the learnings from the book, and then Whitney and I are now reading it together. I'm reading it again. She's reading it for the first time. But the stuff that we implemented a lot with Walker, who's our middle child, we are seeing the fruits of that big time. And so I'm like, okay, I think we need to reread this, be on the same page about what we do and don't want to do here. But I would highly recommend that book. I'll follow up with you once I'm done with it.
Well, I also, while you were talking, it made me think of Love Does by Bob Goff. Hmm. It's a really good book.
Okay. What's that about?
I'd say it's very much the philosophy I talked about earlier of like just love God, love your neighbor, and action.
Love does.
Mm-hmm. Love does.
All right, one more. What advice would you give to a smart-driven college student about to enter the real world, or what advice should they ignore?
So most of our staff are younger college and high school, but our leadership staff are just graduating college at camp. And so I actually give this advice a lot. A lot of them are wrestling with like, what job am I going to get? Where am I going to live? Who am I going to live with? How much am I going to get paid? Right. And so I say, okay, if you location of your job, what the job is, what the pay is, whether you're in the same city as friends and significant other are like the five. And I'm like, if you get two of those, you're doing great. And so the advice there would be just like measuring your expectations. And not that everything after college is bad, but it's just different. College is so self-focused. And as you move out of college, you're hopefully, in my opinion, trying to create some of that community that's going to last, you know, longer than the 4 years of college. College is very much about community, but it's short term. So therefore, it's very intense. And you just can't sustain that intensity for a long time. But, right, it might be the job you want in the city you want for a little less money that you want, and you might have one friend. Or you might be where all your friends are, but it's not exactly the job you want, but it's paying you good, right? So you're not, if you're not going to get all five of those, and therefore you should be thankful for what you do have, and then you also control the other aspects as well. Like, if something is not where you want it to be, just do something every day to get closer to your goal. I'll never forget, one of the first things I did after college was travel in South Africa a little bit, and I volunteered there. And what it was happening, what the reality wasn't exactly the picture that I saw, and this was advice my mom gave me. She said, it's clear that what you're doing doesn't match what you want it to look like. And she said, just do one thing every day that gets you closer to where you want to be.
Incremental gains.
And it felt really overwhelming to think about, oh my gosh, have I made the wrong choice? This is going to be terrible. But it's like, no, what can I control? And I'll never forget, the next day I woke up and I was like, well, one thing I envisioned was enjoying the beach in South Africa while I was here, because I was on the coast. I was like, I'm going to go to the beach today. And it's like, do one thing.
Yeah.
And it all changed from there.
Oh, well, Mo, this was an absolute pleasure to have you on. Thank you for coming. This has been a long time coming in my brain to have you on the podcast. So you've had a lot of life happening in the last couple of years. So thank you for prioritizing today. I hope it's not our last conversation on the podcast, because I have so many, a list of topics that we could touch on and expand on, parenting and many other things. As far as people who are curious about camp, what's the best place I can direct them?
Oh, great question. Well, and in response to what you said, I'm honored to have been on and enjoyed the conversation. Our website is probably the best place to start, www.seagull-seafarer.org.
Okay. And I'll link that in the show
notes. You
could
also just Google Camp Seagull, Camp Seafarer.
Okay. And they'll find everything they need. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, absolute pleasure. Super fun. I've known you for a long time, and I had no doubt that this conversation would unearth a lot of things that I didn't already know about you, and it did. So thank you for sharing, and I have no doubt that someone's inspired by your words today. So thanks.
Well, thank you.
Hey, listener, it's Clay. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Build with Clay podcast. I encourage you to subscribe wherever you listen so you can discover all the episodes and hear from others about their growth journey. If you know me at all, you know that I love feedback. So please rate the episode and provide your comments so I can grow and be better for you and our guests. For more content, you can find Build with Clay on Instagram at Build with Clay, and head to claydavis.substack.com, where you can sign up for a bi-weekly newsletter sent directly to your inbox. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you're inspired to grow.